Addiction never affects just the addict. It affects all of us. Recovering from addiction and alcoholism is also a life-changing battle for families dealing with a loved one's addiction. Numerous programs support addicts as they reclaim their lives, while their families face their own challenges without the same guidance. You're listening to Voices in Courage with K.L. Wells, where we transform the lives of the families and loved ones of addicts and alcoholics from surviving to thriving in the midst of chaos. Tune in as we highlight vulnerable stories of families who have addicted relatives and friends and learn how they have dealt with the challenges of isolation, desperation, and shame. If you are seeking ways to live your best life, then we welcome you into this safe space. Be a part of change today with your host, K.L. Wells.
Thank you so much for being here today. Today, we have one of my favorite people that I get to see almost every day. She is a coach and trainer, and I am proud to say she's my coach now. So I would love to welcome Janet to our group today. So thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, it is truly a delight. And the reason why I'm so excited is because I've gotten to know you over the years. Gosh, has it been almost 8 years now where I've kind of known you, walked by, worked out a little bit. I trained with you when I was an intern, but it wasn't until recently when we both kind of just said, oh, hey, oh, me too. And so we've kind of started to peel the onion back a little bit. And so before we do that, I actually kind of want to get to know a little bit about who you are. Who would you say is Janet? If someone were to ask you on the street, who are you all about?
Well, I'm a mom and a grandma and a wife, and I have 4 kids, 2 grandkids. I've been married for 24 years. I'm a personal trainer, been a personal trainer for almost 20 years, and I've worked at the same place this whole time. And I also run boot camps for women. I do a lot of programs for women. That's kind of my little niche, but I really love helping people get stronger and more confident and healthier.
Yeah, that's what I would say. When people first meet you, it's intimidating in a very positive way because when you walk by Janet, she is so physically strong. When you walk by her, you take such tremendous care in terms of health and wellness. What many may not know, because they may not have the opportunity to know, is the interior core of how well you take care of you. Because in our conversations, I've found out a little bit about some of your daily practices. So what are some of the things that you do to take care of yourself from the moment you wake up until the moment your head hits the pillow?
Well, I start my day with exercise. So I do that pretty early in the morning. And I actually have quiet time before that where I don't have my phone or anything. And I either read or pray. I spend about 10 minutes doing that just so that I can kind of quiet my mind before the chaos of the day starts. I drink a little coffee. I call it my cleansing drink. It's like ginger and different peppers and weird stuff. But anyway, I drink that. I can give you the recipe if you want it. Kind of wakes me up, cleanses my system. Then I drink my coffee and then I work out and then I get ready, come to work and I train. And anyway, to stay on top, I really feel like you need the foundation of both nutrition and physical fitness. So I really take care of making sure I'm eating correctly. I like the 80-20 rule. I definitely adhere to that 100%. And I exercise about 5 to 6 days a week, both strength and cardio. And I stay pretty strict with that schedule. And I try to get 8 hours of sleep as well. So I go to sleep fairly early. Some, like last night, my sister-in-law wanted me to go see some music artist 8 o'clock at night. I said, I can't do that. I'm in bed and have fun. I definitely disciplined. I'd say discipline is number one thing for me.
Yeah. And I would say the self-discipline that you show every day, as well as your commitment to not only yourself, but to your clients, is just tremendous. And that's one of the things that set you apart from other people. And the reason why I bring up the way that you go about the world on a daily basis is because about a couple of weeks ago, you and I started to have a conversation and we got to know a little bit about our background and our family. And the reason we have you here today is because you have a loved one who is suffering from addiction. So I was wondering if you could share your story on that.
Yeah. And actually, I have 2 kids that suffer from addiction, but one I was going to talk about with you, Jen, is my daughter. And she's my younger daughter. And it's been over a 10-year struggle now with her both kind of in and out of rehabs, the long, slow process of tough love. When she started showing signs of this, I'd say tail end of 7th grade, 8th grade, I could tell the people she was hanging around with were not good. And I could see her kind of spiraling a little bit. High school was really rough. I mean, high school was really hard. She struggled tremendously. And I didn't really know what to do. I'd never had a loved one who had addiction. I had a cousin that kind of was in and out of that, but not somebody that close to me. So it was, like I said, this slow, long process of, in the beginning, you're kind of scrambling, you don't know what you're doing, you're trying to control everything, and then getting a little bit of help myself and learning that I had to let go of her. And she has to be the one who figures it out. She has to want that help. And it took me a long time to get to where I am now, where I understand the codependency part. That has been the biggest help of my life, is being able to make that separation between helping her and enabling her. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's a way I can help her get better and get healthier, but not enable her.
Right. And when you talk about the beginning stages of where it's all new to you, because there's no roadmap, and many people might describe it as kind of like a spinning or like part of a storm. When you are experiencing that beginning phase, how were you able to navigate the world? Did you listen to your gut? Did you seek resources? What was your go-to in the beginning when you really had no idea where you were going or how you're going to navigate this new part of your life?
Well, it was interesting. So when this first happened, she went to a rehab probably, I don't even know how many years ago, but she went to a rehab, and her first rehab, I want to say, she was under 18. So at that time, she was 17 when that happened. We were just got under the radar and had her go. We forced her to go because we could. And they had counselors there. And that was kind of my first interaction with a counselor or someone who could help guide me a little bit. Then it was kind of a back and forth thing where she was in and out of rehabs. And at some point, me and my husband were actually having a marriage counseling session. And the counselor said, hey, there's this group down in La Jolla. It's called Mamas and Papas. And it's for people who have adult children who are addicts. And I went to that. It literally changed my life. Couldn't even talk the first couple of meetings. I just sat in the back and cried and still kind of lost. Like I was swimming to the surface. Then I was able to talk and I felt like I wasn't alone anymore. Before that time, I felt like I was literally like the most diseased human. No one could understand my story. I was completely alone. I had coworkers and clients and friends who had perfect lives with these perfect little kids, and everybody was happy, and they do the Christmas cards, everybody happy on the front. And I was like, my life is nothing like that. My family is destroyed. It's in tatters. So it's like, once I got into Mamas and Papas, that was my people.
Right.
So
that's so huge that you found a group that was your support group, because that is life changing, really. Right. And when you're in that group, all of a sudden you feel like you're a part of something. So in that beginning stage, and you're starting to realize, okay, I'm not alone. Was there a period or a moment where an experience where you just couldn't put one foot in front of the other? And the reason why I bring that up is because I see you every day moving about in the world as a very strong, positive presence. But I can imagine that were times where it was hard maybe to get out of bed or put a foot in front of the other. When you were in that moment, the reason why I ask is because I know a lot of our members are in that moment right now. It's hard to get out of bed. It's hard to go to the job. It's hard to put on a positive face. Is there a time when you had a moment and you're like, just can't do it? And then you found a way to do that. Was there ever a time for you like that?
Absolutely. Especially when my daughter was homeless. There was a couple of times when it was just horrible things were happening to her. And she lived in another city when that was happening. So I'd go and visit her and then I'd leave. And I'd have to leave her. And she would either be at a friend's house or at a park. And this is a young, vulnerable woman. She was probably around 19 or 20 at this time. And it was unbearable to be alive. Every moment was hellish and horrible. So as I'm driving back, it was about an hour and a half away. I was literally crying my eyes out, praying, listening to spiritual music, Christian music, and just literally like trying to get in touch with God and being like, please save my daughter. Tell me what to do. Actually, I prayed for her to have the Holy Spirit come upon her and press her so much that she would beg me to go to rehab. And I actually prayed that. I prayed for her to be uncomfortable, where she was surrendering and wanted to go. And it was her decision. And it happened.
That is such an important part that you're saying there, because in many of our experiences, they have to get uncomfortable and they have to make the choice in order for the change to happen to a healthier way of living. And that's something I think that not all of us get in the beginning part, in the beginning stages of it, because we want so much to help. It's our loved one, whether it's a child or a spouse or whatever it is. And so now you're talking as a parent, there's this unconditional love. this unconditional peace that you're talking about. And that, I think, makes you in the way you go about the world, because as a mother myself, our kids can almost do no wrong until they do a wrong. And we're like, okay, wait a minute. Yeah. With that unconditional love, what I think makes you amazing is, as a parent, in the loving, strong parent that you are, you have to navigate it sometimes a little differently. So when you have someone who, a child who is in pain, and like you talked about getting them uncomfortable, besides prayer, what are some of the steps that you took, actual daily steps that you had to take that were on your part in addition to the praying?
Compartmentalizing. So when I worked, I continued to work. And actually, that was a place I could escape. So when I went to work, I left all that literally out the door. It takes me about 30 minutes to drive to work. And when I was driving there, I'd just be kind of like getting myself ready to see clients, to be with clients, and to really focus on them and to kind of separate myself from my real life. And by the time I got to work, I walk in the door, I am a trainer. I'm Janet. This is what I'm doing. And I focused on my clients. My sole focus. And honestly, it was like complete escape. I just wanted to know about their lives, about them, their progress with what we're doing together. I wanted to really just have them have the best hour of their entire life. And I would do that all day long. And I took care of myself in addition to that. So I would also escape into my workouts. I work out for about an hour and a half a day, and I would just get the most motivational music on. I would completely shut out. I would not allow that part of my life to take control of those other parts of my life. So my workout, I would not let it get poisoned with that. It was like very sacred to me. You could not take that away from me. So like with me and my husband, I'd be like, I have to have that hour and a half to myself. I don't want to be bothered. I don't want to be interrupted. This is my time. And I put full energy into that.
So again, there's your self-discipline, your commitment, and your prioritizing yourself with self-care.
Yes.
The self-care piece, I think, is another aspect that many of us miss, because it's very good and very easy to be distracted by a problem or a challenge or knocking on your shoulder. And so I think that keeping that hour and that the motivational music, all of that is such a critical piece to this, because the moment you let that one workout go, or that hour, whatever it is that you do to center yourself, then it goes the next day. And then the next day, and then it becomes a pattern. So you've actually created a pattern for yourself for daily self-care,
yeah,
which is tremendous. And so with that being said, I wonder if there's ever any moments, because you're so committed, when someone comes up to you and says, how are you? Is there ever a moment where you just want to scream and just say, I'm not okay?
Yeah. About before my daughter, she had a baby in 2016. And before that happened, she was homeless. And she hasn't been homeless since, but she's relapsed since. But anyway, when she was homeless, that was probably the hardest time, to be honest. That was one of the hardest times, because just her vulnerability and what was happening to her was so awful. So there was a couple of times when some coworkers had come up to me. And I remember actually specifically one time I was about to go teach a boot camp. And my boss had come up to me and asked me how I was doing. And thank goodness I was in the break room, because I totally broke down and lost it. Like I was holding it together and I was holding it together. And something about the way he kind of caught my eye and asked me, and I just lost it. And he was like, he was really there for me. He kind of hugged me and encouraged me. And he's like, go teach the best boot camp class you've ever taught in your life. And he kind of pumped me up. And I pulled any saw. And also, don't be afraid to show them that you're human. Go out there and tell them and say, I'm struggling tonight, guys. I need you as much as you need me. I need you guys tonight. Be there for me. And I did. They all rallied around me and we had a wonderful class, and there was a lot of emotion. Another lady was struggling with something. So like this weird thing kind of opened up and happened.
And I think many of us, because no one really talks about addiction or alcoholism as often as you might talk about whether it's cancer or something awful in and of itself, we don't really go about talking about this. And you did something that was really brave a while back. You had to go take care of your daughter and you sent an email to your team letting them know where you were. And I don't know if I would have had the courage to do that. And so what made you decide to be vulnerable and let everybody see what's going on with Janet? And then what were the after effects? If you could tell everybody what happened after the moment that you really were vulnerable to a team of people.
You know what? It's taken me a long time to get here, first of all, but I don't think I could have done that 10 years ago in the very beginning. In fact, at the very beginning, I didn't hide it. I was trying so hard to be strong in the beginning and survive that I just didn't have that kind of understanding that I do now. So I was just going on one cylinder calendar at that moment. Back then, I was just like trying to get through the day and trying to survive. I had other kids. I was at home. And it was anyway. So now I was up in with my grandson. I was taking care of him while my daughter was in rehab. I was up there for about almost 3 months and I had to stop my life. I lived up there. I lived in her apartment. And here I am being mommy to my grandson. It's a lot of work at my age and it's really hard and my energy's not as good. But anyway, it's just not. But then I came back and I worked for a little while. And then I kind of was sitting at home one day and actually I was at work. And then I went home and I was at work and I was thinking about it. And then I came home and I was sitting there and something just came over me where I'm like, this is me. This is who I am. I'm not just a really fit trainer that has whatever people see on Instagram or Facebook. There's more to me. And I don't like the fact that a lot of addiction is hidden, like especially in Hollywood and music and celebrity culture. Somebody will OD and they don't even talk about it. I think that's terrible and a crime. It's not like we have to like flaunt it, but I'm saying, this is me. This is my life. And I don't know. I felt like I wanted to kind of open it up and just say, this is another part of my life. This is another layer of who I am. That's weird to you and you don't like it. That's on you. But this is just as important to me as all the other layers of my life. And what if, honestly, there's people that I work with and people that I know who have really small kids. There is no way all of those kids are going to come out unscathed. That's a pretty rare percentage if that happens. The most likely, I mean, I hate to say this, but somebody's going to have a bump in the road and they may think about me and I can come and help them. So I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to expose myself just so that there isn't someone like me 10 years ago floundering around suffering. I can help them. And maybe they'll donate to the rehab that my daughter's at, or maybe they'll pray for my daughter. Instead of making it a secret, it's like, I'm going to expose it because the secrets, I can't do that. I can't live a secret life.
Yeah, that's something that not many people can do. And that's one of the reasons why I really felt like our listeners needed to meet you. I'm wondering how your life changed because you took the power back and you said, this is me. And was it acceptance? Was it peace? What was it for you when you had that moment? And then everybody started to learn a little bit more about Janet. Did your life start to change? Did you start to feel, walk about the world differently?
Well, you know, it kind of felt a little bit more like you said, I got my power back. I just heard you say that. That's incredible. That's really what I felt like I did. I almost felt like all that darkness and shame and embarrassment, I kind of just threw it out the window. And I was like, nope, we're going to get better. And the only way to get better is to face this thing in the face and expose it for what it is and ask for help, be honest about who I am and live my life authentically. And then it was interesting. My boss read my email and he really wanted me to get on his podcast. And I can't tell you how many people have reached out to me who have thanked me and said they are in the same situation, or maybe they're not. And they said they just inspired them. And one guy said, I'm just in awe of you. I don't even know what to say because you're so brave and it helps me do the things I need to do. And he doesn't even have kids. So it's interesting how you affect people when you become brave.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. You know? When I listened to your interview with Todd, there was one moment that you literally just had me breaking down crying when it was a conversation with God. And I'm going to let you tell the story, but I hope you know the one I'm referring to when you're questioning why me, and then you felt like he responded to you. If you could share that story, because that is really powerful.
Yeah. So I was taking care of my grandson a long ways away from where I live right now. So plane ride away, a whole day of driving away. And my husband, he had to continue to work down where we live. And so he would come and visit me. So one time he came and visited me and I was able to go out and run because my grandson is little, he's only 5. So I couldn't leave him alone. And so I went out running and something about the song I was listening to hit me. And I was also thinking about all these other people who have these perfect lives, some of my friends. And I think I had looked at Instagram and I was there like, oh, we have this perfect little family and everybody's happy and we're posing for Christmas pictures. And I was like, why can't I have that? That is like one of my lifelong dreams, is to have the little Christmas card picture with all my family on it and in the coordinating outfits and everybody's happy. Like, I would really love to have that. And I remember running and thinking, why can't I have that? Why do I have to have this life? And I was kind of talking to God and I was a little bit mad. And I was like, why did you give me this? Why do I have to have this? And very interesting thing came over me where I was like, there's a reason I have this. There's a reason I have this life. He wants me to suffer because it will bring greater understanding to more people. Because if I can use this, if I can use this situation to help other people, then it is not lost. My life is not lost. This is my journey. My journey is not to have the perfect little Christmas card family situation. It is to have this. It is to be talking to people like you and all those people that reached out to me and people that are listening to me right now, that you are not alone and you can get through this and your family can get better. You can get better. You can survive this. So I remember I was saying, why do I have to carry this? But he said, you have to carry this, Janet. It's not going to go away anytime soon. I don't know if it's going to get better. It may be back and forth for the rest of your life, but this is what you have to carry. And I'm sorry, it's not fun, but it's yours to carry. And that was the conversation. And I came back from my run. I actually started writing about it. But anyway, that was that conversation.
It brings chills when, again, I mean, it's because you're so strong that you can do this because you're so internally strong, physically, mentally, and emotionally. And so when you talk about the Christmas card, I can guarantee you that most of us in this group feel the same way. And it's nice to have someone say the words that I wanted that Christmas card and my family doesn't look like that. And it's not until one of us speaks up that we all can say, oh, me too. Or yeah, I feel the same way. So again, what you're doing is so powerful and it's so meaningful and it's so helpful, especially around the holidays when you get those cards, right? Where you see the summer vacations or something. And it's on those days when you're by yourself and you're alone and you're thinking, why me? And the other piece about you that I love, I was hoping that you could talk on is I don't hear you when I see you on a daily basis, ever looking at yourself as a victim, because it's so very easy to think you had that moment of why me? I mean, who doesn't? Because we're all human, but you cut it and you said, okay, I can carry this. I can do this. So how do you not slip into the victim role? Because when you get hit from one thing after another, whether it's having anything to do with the disease that's knocking on your door, asking for some attention, or just life in general. This is a lifelong disease. It's not, as you said, going away. How do you maintain the mindset to not be a victim?
Well, I'll tell you, I think it's just part of my DNA because I am not a victim in any part of my life. I actually do not like that at all, like being hurt chronically or sick, or there are people that really do legitimately suffer from that. And I don't want to discount that, but there are also people who use that way too often to hide from their potential. There's a book called You Are a Badass. I think she talks about it in there about going to your fullest potential and not using these excuses. And you know what? I don't have time to feel sorry for myself. I don't have time for that. I like viewing myself almost like a Navy SEAL. I think if I was in another life, I would have been a Navy SEAL. I just met a woman who's training to be a Navy SEAL. So now I can't say that anymore. But anyway, but I kind of go into suffering. I kind of go into pain and I'm like, how bad can it get? Let's do this. Let's go to the end of what I can take. And I don't have time to feel sorry for myself. I have too many blessings. This was happening and I was living in her apartment, taking care of my grandson. She's in rehab, complete relapse. My family is all upset about this. I was grateful. I'm going to get a little bit emotional. 1 year ago today, my very good friend lost her son in a car accident. And he was only 23 years old. His name was Colton Marbro. She wants me to say his name. His name was Colton. And so my friend doesn't have her son. I have my kids. I have my grandkids still. And that would be really wrong of me to feel sorry for myself when she gets up every day and she doesn't feel sorry for herself. She's actually at a place in her life where she's like trying to help people. But today, she has mourned the loss of her son a year ago. And so I don't have the privilege of doing that. Not even the privilege, but I don't have the right to feel sorry for myself. And I won't do that. I have my daughter and I have my life. So
the other thing that struck me when I heard your other interview is that we both actually use the same language where we were in a club that we didn't want to belong to. And that is an initial thought when you meet this disease. You just took us along a nice storyline of, yes, we're a part of this club, but there are a lot of other people who are a lot tougher clubs to be in, like you just mentioned. And that is why I have such respect for you, because you are able to acknowledge that and recognize that when there's still people out there who really may not be there right quite yet. And that's understandable. And you are there. And so that's why it's so important for people to hear your story, because you're still able to find gratitude every single day with all of your experience. And so that's such a gift to our group. So thank you for that. And I have just a couple more questions for you. You've done such a phenomenal job talking of your place and how you hold space in this world in a positive way. Can you talk a little bit about the family dynamics? Because like we've said, addiction doesn't just happen to the addict. It happens to all of us. So for some people, that might be a husband and wife, or there might be other children involved. So clearly you navigate the world very well. Do you have any suggestions for people who may be struggling with family dynamics?
Oh, yeah. And I've got it pretty badly. Me and my husband, we've had to get marriage counseling because we've been on different ends of this. It's affected us very negatively. I mean, I guess I don't think it would affect anyone positively. The really sad thing, and this is really sad, and I think about this all the time. Right now, this is probably one of my biggest things on my heart, is the dissension of my kids, their relationship. So my oldest son suffers from addiction, and he's been clean for 2 years. That's a whole nother conversation about him. And then my older daughter, you know, never had a problem with it. And then Lauren suffered, and the one we're talking about, my younger daughter. And then my youngest son has really been affected by all of this because he's been affected by the older two siblings. And it had taken him a long time to forgive my younger daughter and let her back into his life. And this happened. And there's a lot going on there because, for one thing, he has a right to have boundaries. And I can't just be like, forgive her, love her. Because what about his boundaries? What about his feelings? And their forgiveness that happened, I kept completely out of it. Because my older daughter got married about a year ago, and my younger daughter came to the wedding, and this was right before she relapsed. And she was doing okay. Could tell there was like some slippage, but she was doing pretty good. And they started talking to each other. And at one point during the reception, he told her he loved her. And I have a picture of the three of us together. It's the first picture in like 10 years of the three of us. And it was like, I had it. And then it goes. That just really sucks. I can't even tell you. I really want my kids to love each other. I love my brother and sister. They're part of my body. Like, they're my best friends. And I just don't see that happening for my family. Something that I kind of need to let go of, this image that I really want it to be, accept it more for what it is, and actually just kind of do a just complete change of direction. I kind of need to get away from that session over that. I need to go talk to someone. That's your cue right there, right? But I feel really bad, but I also want to respect my son's space and his feelings about it and his boundaries, because he's been very negatively affected by this. They were the two youngest ones and they lived together the longest, and he was affected by her many times. So he has a right to draw that boundary. And I have a friend who has a sister, similar situation. He's in his 50s and they have no relationship at all. And that breaks my heart. But at the same time, I mean, he has to respect and have his life protected because she just kept doing it and doing it. So that to me breaks my heart. I'm looking for a book or some kind of a podcast about that specific thing that can help me let go of that. Because how do you get together for Christmas gatherings? How do you do anything like that? Like, Christmas is coming and I'm kind of dreading, to be honest. I'm very much dreading the holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, because she wants to come down here. And I can't just exile her. I can't say, no, you can never come down again. So that's like a whole thing that I have to actually figure out.
And these are the things that family members of addicts and alcoholics, you're bringing up things that are real things that we struggle with that are not necessarily in everyday conversations with people. So it's, again, nice to validate people who go through that with their own families. First of all, also thank you for acknowledging therapy. And not being ashamed of therapy, because therapy is such an important tool, whether it's marriage therapy or individual therapy. Family therapy, there's no shame in going to therapy. And so I'm so glad that you mentioned that as we're bringing our interview to a close. But I think that that's an important piece that you bring up. And so with that, as we come to a close, are there any books that you can recommend for parents in particular, if their child is an addict or an alcoholic, that you have found to be spectacular in helping you?
You know what? I'm looking for those right now. I would say for me, it was mainly the Mamas and Papas group, but I actually need advice on the book. I should be more of a reader. I read a little bit, but try to think of any books I had read ever. Nothing comes off the top of my head, but
I know you have a good quote. So many quotes that really make me think. So is there a Bible quote or passage or just personal quote that you live by?
Well, I did say one in the interview with my boss. We talked about God is like near the brokenhearted and helps the crushed in spirit. But there was another one I read yesterday and I don't know where it came from, but basically was saying, I know the end said, basically it was saying, I will be with you through this. You can make it through this. And the end said, you will not be consumed in fire. So if anybody wants to Google that, that was the last part of that passage. You will not be consumed by the flames, I think it said.
Oh, I love
and
that.
I'm going to send that to you. But if anybody wants to Google it, not be consumed by the flames, that whole passage, it's three or four sentences, maybe even longer. It is amazing. I wish I would have seen that a long time ago. But yeah, it's a Bible passage. It's a few verses and it's really good.
Oh, that's great. I love that. I have one final question, and then I want to leave the audience with special something I know about you that I want to share. The last question I have for you is, if you had never met the disease of addiction in your family, if it had never been present in your life, how do you think your life would have turned out differently, if at all?
Well, I'll start with my grandma, who died of alcoholism when I was very little. I was like 3 years old. So I would have had a grandma. That would have been awesome. She was very lonely and she felt like she didn't have anyone. And I wish she would have held on because she could have met me. So, and I could have a grandma because I didn't have a grandma. Anyway, and then God, I can't even imagine where my daughter would be right now. So many things. I think she probably would have been out in the world, maybe even working at a hospital, maybe even been like an OBGYN or delivering babies. She's just really smart and she loves helping people. And then with my own life, meaning like I had put my life on hold while I did all this. That's not happening anymore, though. I would be pursuing what I'm doing now, and I'm living my life to the fullest. I'm investing in me. I am thriving in my career, opening up, reaching out. But I think that I can't even imagine it really, Jennifer, because it's so foreign to me. It's like, it's been a part of our lives for so long now. But I mean, I guess I'd be that little Christmas card family.
So I understand that. And to kind of end on that, when you have that beautiful picture that we're both talking about, right? And I've mentioned it before, where it's kind of like shaking the puzzle and we have to put together new puzzle pieces in a new picture. Sometimes that new picture, however, could be even more beautiful than the first that we had imagined. So that's kind of a piece that I hold on to because I understand with what you're saying, because who knows, but it is a part of our lives and it will continue to be. And that's the reason why we're doing what we're doing, because it's not going to go away. It is forever a part of our lives. When we love someone with this disease, it is a lifelong disease. So we have to work together and have these open conversations so we can build a better community to help not just the addict and the alcoholics that need help because they have the support, but we also need more support and a bigger community to help us navigate. So the one funny thing that I want everybody to know about you is when you were living in your daughter's apartment and you were taking care of your grandson, how did you work out specifically? How or what did you deadlift with?
So I had very minimal equipment when I was up in my daughter's apartment. I had given her some, so I had a TRX, some weights, but very little weights. My brother loaned me like tens. So I was just like, oh my God, I need a deadlift. Well, I deadlift a lot of weight. So I was looking around her house. I'm like, the only thing I can really deadlift is her couch. I was going to film myself doing it.
You have to go back up there next time you're up there and just have somebody film you.
And I'm just thinking, you know what? Whatever gets it done,
right?
Whatever way you can do it, get it done. And actually it's pretty effective and it worked. But yes, I was deadlifting her couch.
That's so easy. Whatever you can do to get it done. And that is a great way to end today. I want to thank you so much for being here with us today. Ladies and gentlemen, she is a fantastic premier trainer and coach. I'm so blessed to know her almost each and every day when I go to the gym. When you see her, she's the one with the really buff arms. But what I hope you all learned today is that not only is she just so phenomenal on the outside, but inside, she's actually even stronger than what she presents on the outside because she has that heart and that character and that strength and that commitment. And so we thank you so much for sharing that with us today because you are one of a kind. So thank you, Janet. We appreciate you being here and thank you everybody for joining us today. And we'll see you next time.
Addiction never affects just the addict. It affects all of us. Recovering from addiction and alcoholism is also a life-changing battle for families dealing with a loved one's addiction. Numerous programs support addicts as they reclaim their lives, while their families face their own challenges without the same guidance. You're listening to Voices in Courage with K.L. Wells, where we transform the lives of the families and loved ones of addicts and alcoholics from surviving to thriving in the midst of chaos. Tune in as we highlight vulnerable stories of families who have addicted relatives and friends and learn how they have dealt with the challenges of isolation, desperation, and shame. If you are seeking ways to live your best life, then we welcome you into this safe space. Be a part of change today with your host, KL Wells.